Welcome into the Titan-Sized Podcast. I'm Luke Worsham, joined by the other two hosts of the Titan-Sized Podcast, Matthias Wadner, Will Lomas. The Tennessee Titans took on the Carolina Panthers on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. They defeated the Panthers in a meaningless preseason game, but there were a lot of takeaways. And we're going to start off by talking about the man under center. That's Marcus Mariota. In the first game against the Jets, we saw that he was healthy. Yesterday, we saw that he was, he was 100%. He just looked really, really good yesterday.
Yeah, he did. He looked good in the first game, too. On the first play of the game, he rolled out to his right, and he looked as mobile as ever. And you saw in this game also when the fan called that read option. And he took it 9 yards to his right also, and he looked just as fast as he's always been, which is really good to see. And even better than just seeing that his legs are healthy, it's seeing him not rusty in terms of his passing, his timing with his receivers, a lot of which are new receivers. So to see him in sync within the offense was really good. And, I mean, he's primed for a huge season coming up, and everything until this point points to that.
Yeah, the word poised is overused in the preseason, but he looked really comfortable back there. You know, whether it was a three-step drop, whether he was carrying the ball, whether he's delivering it to Delanie Walker, who's multiple Pro Bowler, or Trey McBride, who might not make the roster. I mean, he looked comfortable with everybody. He looked really crisp.
Someone else that looked really, really good yesterday was Kevin Byard. At one point, I tweeted out that he's going to be a star, and the reason I say that is because he just looks, in my mind, I feel like he could be as good as Earl Thomas in that he plays all over the field. He's a sideline-to-sideline safety. He can make big hits in the running game. He can take away the middle of the field in the passing game. I think he's in for a really, really good sophomore season after having to play strong safety in the box most of the time as a rookie.
Yeah, and he's still kind of playing inside the box. We've seen it through these first two preseason games. He's pretty much omnipresent at this point. He's just everywhere around the field. You see him in the box. He's cutting into the backfield, making plays on running backs, tackling for loss. He's covering on the back end, and he's picking up fumbles, forced fumbles. Like, he's really everywhere. And right now, it seems, I'm not going to say he's the best defensive player we have, because Brian Arakpo and Jarrell Casey are still there, but he might be the third best player on our defense right now.
Yeah, he really does everything. I know every week I start tweeting out, you know, he may be the team's best corner, safety, and linebacker, because he just is everywhere. You know, he always has a knack for finding where the ball is, and whether that's tape study or instincts or just, you know, whatever, that one extra thing that some guys have, you know, he tracked down a ball to Christian McCaffrey on the sideline and made a tackle. When the fumble was there, he was the one that picked it up. There really is no wrong way to use him. If you want to have him covering the tight end 1 week, you can do that. If you want to have him line up as an extra linebacker, he can do that. If you want him to line up with a slot guy, he can do that. I mean, I have not seen him be beat consistently in any role since he's been a Tennessee Titan.
That play with McCaffrey was just so encouraging, because the Titans brought blitz on that one. And if McCaffrey had even a sliver of space between him and the defender, he probably would have taken it maybe 20, 30 yards. But Byard was right on him. And I think McCaffrey only got like 1 yard after the catch. So and that was really good to see.
The difference in being at the stadium versus watching on TV is you can see the whole field versus just seeing certain camera angles. And when I realized, oh my goodness, they're setting up McCaffrey for this pass in the flat, by the time I realized that, I look up and Byard was already in chase mode coming to McCaffrey.
Yeah, and when you see Melvin Gordon gashed just so bad last year with the Chargers, it just looks like that won't happen. You know, there's no jitters when it's a faster back. He's not afraid to come down and strike a bigger back. He really just seems to be fearless and come downhill like an Earl Thomas, like you said. Now, you know, we might be a year away from him being that peak all-pro kind of guy, because he doesn't play in a cover three where he can really come down as often. But, you know, if they let him play more free in the box like they have been in preseason, he could make that impact on nearly every play in that 5 yard range.
So we've talked about two players who looked really good yesterday. Let's turn the table a little bit and talk about someone who did not look quite as good, and that is second-year outside linebacker Kevin Dodd. At this point, I don't know what string pass rusher he is, because you obviously have the two big dogs in Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan, and behind them you have Eric Walden, and I'm not so sure that I wouldn't rather have Aaron Wallace or Josh Caraway, two guys who are more of those speed, twitchy edge rushers, than Dodd, who hasn't shown that he can do anything.
I mean, we were concerned about Dodd because of his foot injury, and now we're just blatantly concerned about his level of play. He's shown nothing in the action that he's been on the field for. And Aaron Wallace looks 10 times better than he does, much more of a feel for the pass rush, and he's just quicker. I mean, Dodd was never going to be like a quick pass rusher, but he just can't really beat his guy at this point. And even Josh Caraway, when he's coming in, he just looks better than Kevin Dodd right now. He's faster, more athletic, and he's at least getting into the backfield at a more frequent pace than Dodd has been.
It's tough to watch, because at times, you know, you'll focus on him and say, okay, let's watch Kevin Dodd go forward. And his first step will be back or to the side, and he's reading so much. And I don't know if that's because he's playing in that outside linebacker position instead of a 4-3 base end where he can really rush upfield and go. But you can see that he's thinking that the gears are turning and it's really just not clicking for him right now. I hope that more time in this system with LeBeau in actual live action will help him process things quicker and go, and maybe Dick LeBeau can see he's not a guy you want to drop in coverage more than 5 or 6 times a game, which really shouldn't be his role. He should come in to spell Derek Morgan and go forward and rush the passer, you know, and have that base end size to really help in the run game and maybe get a few sacks along the way. But dropping him into coverage is not going to work, and I think they'll see that, and I have to trust Dick LeBeau and the rest of the defensive coaches to say this is the way we have to use him, and he may just have a more finite role going forward. But no, there's nothing encouraging so far about Kevin Dodd.
Yeah, I haven't liked seeing him go out and cover in the flat. He's done it, I think, a couple times through the first two games, and he just doesn't really look natural doing it. I'm just concerned because, I mean, he's already a 25-year-old. How much more time is he going to get to blossom? Maybe he's one of those late bloomers that comes into his own later in his career, maybe like a Jerry Hughes or something, but it just doesn't seem like that's a possibility right now.
I mean, a backup fullback blew by him on the sideline yesterday.
Yeah. That guy's fast, apparently.
You know, you talked about guys who are late bloomers. Most of those guys have the athleticism you want, and they just find the right scheme later down the road, and it just doesn't work out. Kevin Dodd doesn't have that. He's not somebody who's going to show out on track. You know, he didn't blow up the combine, anything like that. He wowed everybody with his production, especially in the national championship game where he had 3 sacks. But, you know, a 10-sack season in his last year was great. He really came on when he was a full-time starter, and there were some encouraging signs to say maybe he deserved a bigger role and he should have had more buzz and been a first-round guy if he'd have started for more than 1 year. Now we're coming in, and maybe that was a fluke. Maybe it was just because they used him as a 4-3 base end. Something has to change, though.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to give John Robinson the benefit of the doubt on this one because he's drafted and made some really good signings, but it's looking like that Dodd pick is really going to come back to haunt him.
Sure.
Over the last several years, the Titans have really, really struggled on special teams, not necessarily punting or kicking field goals, but returning kicks and covering kicks. It's been a nightmare over the last 2 years. Special teams coordinator Bobby April was fired less than halfway through the season last year. But yesterday was sitting in that stadium was some of the best kick coverage I've ever seen in the NFL, not just from the Titans. I mean, Carolina Panthers returners were being met almost as soon as they brought the ball out of the end zone. I think twice they made stops inside the 10-yard line on kickoffs. It's looking like all of the additions, Eric Weems, Brendan Trawick, Darren Bates, all of those guys that John Robinson added this offseason, it's already paying dividends, and it's exciting.
Yeah, it's so beautiful when something you put resources and time into, it actually works out. And right now it's looking like that special teams makeover is working out, because on the first kickoff that the Panthers received, I'm not sure who pushed the kick returner like towards the inside, but Trawick met him at the 10-yard line and he made the tackle, which is exactly what he was brought in here to do. And there are a lot of players who are making contributions on special teams, some players that you wouldn't really expect. Like Jason Morrow made two special teams tackles yesterday. David Fluellen, who had a great game at running back, even made a special teams tackle. So everyone's contributing. It's clear that the team is better in that area, and it's gonna be huge for the team going forward.
Yeah, I think the biggest improvement is you can see guys who were on the team last year actually making special teams tackles. You said Jason Morrow, you said Fluellen, who wasn't on the active roster last year, but you had Trey McBride flash a lot, both in last game and he did some in this game, and Denoris Searcy came down and had a really good tackle,
yeah,
where it looked like if he'd have cut one more way, he might have sprung. But no, I mean, it was just great coverage, blanket coverage. When Ryan Succop is the weakest link in your special teams because he missed a field goal and he also made a 50-yard field goal at one point, you know, that's a great day on special teams.
Succop had a rough day in general yesterday, too.
Yeah,
he hit the upright on one of them, right?
Yeah, I kind of described it as just kind of having some flair with it just because he was bored of preseason. But, you know, if like I said, if Ryan Succop is having a bad day, it's because he's not taking it serious and he's not really paying attention. You know, he's shown throughout the course of a season that when he wants the light to come on, it'll come on. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he banked one off the upright and made it in, which is hard to do, and it should count for 2 points. But that's a whole different discussion.
Almost pulled an Aguayo. Watch that.
Don't put that on him.
No, never.
Over those last few years, we've dealt with Mark Mariani with bricks on his feet. We've dealt with we've dealt with Darius Raynaud. We've dealt with Damian Williams, Dexter McCluster. The point I'm getting to is that now we have this shiny new kick returner whose name is Adoree Jackson, a rookie out of USC. And in his first game at Nissan Stadium, he blew by the Carolina defense. It was called back for a penalty, but he looked really, really explosive and much faster than anyone I've ever seen return a punt for the Titans.
Dude, he got to the end zone in like 3 seconds. It was just a blur. yeah, unfortunately, I mean, the penalties brought it back, but I mean, that's all I want to see. I just wanted to see him return a punt and do it well. I think he had one kickoff return, and he probably shouldn't have taken it out, but I mean, it's preseason, so might as well take the risk and see if you could do anything with it. But yeah, I mean, I know the coaches probably don't want to use him as the kick returner also, and probably just use him as a punt returner, but I don't see how you don't put him on kick returns. Anytime he's on the field, he could score a touchdown, and you just can't take that off the field.
Yeah, if he's not going to be a starting cornerback in any preseason game, or if it's week one of the season, you know, if he's going to be a rotational guy, he needs to be on kick return and punt return. He is fast. I mean, Malarkey said after the game, it doesn't matter if there's been a flag or not, since he's been coaching both, I believe he said, as an assistant and as a head coach with the Titans, they haven't had a punt return for a touchdown. Now, you know, I mean, that's how rare it is. And he did it on his one real punt return with any sort of room. I mean, he just looked different. And you can talk about the holds and all that. The Super and all thing was not very impactful. He had already cut off that guy before Super and all made contact. I don't think that was ever going to be an issue. But, you know, two flags, whatever. It looked like the other guys were just stopped. The kicker and whoever was back there with him. It looked like they had just stopped and he was just slowly running away from them. I mean, we hadn't seen that kind of speed in the open field in a long time.
Yeah, also, it's just good because, I mean, there have been no reports that say, like, Adoree not struggles on punt returns or whatever, or on kick returns, but there's been no reports where he's, like, fumbling a punt return or anything or doing anything risky with it. So he's not really a risk wherever you put him back there, and he's also has a huge reward because he could return it at any point.
I'll go one step farther. I don't think there's been any negative report on Adoree Jackson in any phase. I think the worst thing Mike Mularkey said about him is he's not trusting himself quick enough, which means he knows where the play's going and he makes the play. He just doesn't make an interception on every play. I don't know if he's trying to shield him from mistakes that might burn him and might get in his head, but when Adoree's out there, he doesn't miss tackles. He doesn't let people get easy completions. He's all over the field. There was one play where there was kind of a rub route, and he had to come from more of the center field across and make a tackle, and he made a really good open field tackle, grabbing somebody up top, you know, up around the waist, and them sliding off, and him going back down around their ankles and making a tackle. He really has not looked bad in any phase of the game yet, and I think there's a lot of upside with Adoree Jackson. I think he's going to start for this team sooner rather than later.
There have been multiple times in practices where I've looked at Adoree returning a punt and I've been like, oh, he should have called a fair catch. And then I blink and he's, you know, 30 yards down the field. He's that kind of player. And, you know, I've heard it talked about where the Titans haven't really, since Chris Johnson was in his prime, had that player where the ball's in their hands and all of the fans are on the edge of their seats or stand up to watch the player because they know if the ball's in this guy's hand, it could be in the end zone in about 4 seconds. Adoree Jackson is that guy.
Yeah, it's kind of like Tyreek Hill last year with the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Whenever he touched the ball on a kick or punt return, you kind of felt that he was going all the way. I don't know if Adoree Jackson is as dynamic, but there's been no reason to believe that he isn't. So just to have that kind of player on your team is huge, just from a football standpoint and from a fun standpoint also.
I mean, you look at his college stats, as a punt returner, not as a kick returner where he had 4 touchdowns, as a punt returner, he returned the ball 46 times and had 4 touchdowns. That's nearly 10% of the time you're scoring a touchdown. If you get half that rate in the NFL and you get 2 touchdowns, you're one of 2 guys a year that gets that number. It's rare to score on a punt return touchdown, and we saw him do it with little to no effort.
And he scored like 6 catching touchdowns, I think, receiving touchdowns or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a dynamic player with the ball in his hands anyway. But, you know, just as a return man, a guy who can put up 2 touchdowns, completely flip the flow of the game, it's rare and unheard of. And he's got a good chance to do it in his first year.
I want to bring up someone that I kind of have mixed opinions about, and that's Derrick Henry. Because he's someone where if he gets the edge and he's in open space, it's really hard to tackle him. But I think that he gets a little too much credit for what he's able to do between the tackles. Like he's not exactly hitting these holes with acceleration and falling forward for 7 yards. I mean, he looks really almost slow when he gets the ball running between the tackles, and I think he's slightly overrated in that regard. Do you guys agree?
Luke, this is a hot take right here. We need an alarm sound for this one. No, but I'm not going to say I agree with you because I still think Derrick Henry would be a 1,000-yard back in this offense if DeMarco were to go down or something happened to him. But, I mean, you take out the 17-yard run yesterday, and I think he averaged, what was it, maybe 16 yards on 16 carries or something something about there. That is not. I mean, I know that's a really tough run defense in the Panthers, but they were missing Luke Kuechly. I guess some of it can be attributed to the offensive line not opening a good amount of holes, but he does seem he goes laterally from time to time, maybe a bit too much. I kind of want to see him just go straight forward. I do kind of see what you're saying, that he's a little bit slow in his. In his recovery. I'm not sure if that's him being patient and trying to wait for a hole to open up, but no, I feel you. He's definitely not DeMarco Murray at this point in his career.
So I'm going to kind of ride the fence and go both ways. I agree with you because I think he runs straight up too often, and you see him at 6'3", in the middle of the pile, standing straight up, running into guys and leaning forward and ready to take that, you know, 3-yard gain or whatever that he gets, which is fine. 3 yards in a cloud of dust. We've heard it forever. That'll get a touchdown every time. Where I think there's an issue is the Titans want to run this tight formation, which brings everybody inside. And against a team like the Colts or the Jaguars, who, you know, I think the Jaguars are overrated on defense, but we can talk about that another time, but who I think have pieces that don't really fit, and who you can kind of run into like that. A tight formation is fine, because as soon as you get a crease, you're gone. But against the Jets, who have one of the best defensive lines in football, and the Panthers, who have one of the best defensive lines in football, it's hard to tighten everything up and give them a gap and say, you know, run here, even though these guys are going to be waiting, assuming it's going to be a run. If I'm going to use Derrick Henry, I'm going split formation. I've got two guys on each side, and he's in the backfield with me, like they did on that fourth down run, where it was a spread up in the field, a spread out. You hand it to him, and you let him build up speed, run behind Conklin or Lewan, and have a pulling guard, and just let them clear the way. You know, he does best when there's not eight guys in the box, nine guys in the box, because that's what he saw forever in college, is because, you know, Saban and Kiffin would spread everybody out with Amari Cooper, whoever they had at the time, and run in between like that. They didn't run two tight end sets with two wide receivers lined up close to the ball. So if you want to use him as an inside runner, spread the formation out, let him get that crease. If you want to use him as an outside runner, then you can bunch everybody up and have that crack block with Rishard Matthews and Trey McBride, like they've tried to do a couple of times, and do that. But you have to have a clear plan with how to use him, whereas DeMarco Murray can run inside and out with almost no game plan ahead of time, because he's a better, more developed runner at this point.
Yeah, I want to go back to that fourth down run that you talked about, because it kind of just signals how infuriating sometimes that Terry Robiskie is. I'm still not sold on him. I don't think I'll ever be sold on him as our offensive coordinator, even though we've done some good things. But on that was a great play call on that fourth and two, because Derrick Henry was split out wide, and we were in an empty set, and then they motioned Henry into the backfield. And when they did that, I think the Panthers had maybe five, maybe six players in the box. I mean, if Derrick Henry gets a box like that, he's going to gash you every time, especially with our offensive line. So we should be running – we should be running four wide receivers, or at least three wide receivers, and maybe Delanie Walker split out, and then just let Derrick Henry or DeMarco Murray just gash these weak boxes, because honestly, that's when our offense is running at its peak potential.
Yeah, and we can talk about Jonnu Smith later, but he's a guy you can use as a fullback slash wing slash tight end slash wide receiver. He's just that athletic, and you can see it already. So that's a guy who may, you know, between him and Eric Decker, you may get that jumbo slot guy you've been wanting, and then if they go big, you can just put in Taywan Taylor and let him go.
We spent a lot of time in our last recap episode when we talked about the Titans versus the Jets talking about how bad Alex Tanny was this game, in that game. Yet against the Carolina Panthers, Matt Cassel came in relief of Marcus Mariota and looked spectacular. I don't think there ever was a quarterback battle. If there was, it's over, because Matt Cassel is very clearly the best option behind Mariota.
That was the quarterback battle was just made up by the hashtag Alex Tanny fan club that has like one, maybe two people.
One
on
of
it.
Them being Chrissy there. Freud, it and exists. One of them being Alex Tanny's girlfriend.
Yeah.
I didn't want a name call, but yeah, no, pretty much. Yeah, but I actually thought Alex Tanny looked pretty good when he was going up against third stringers in this game. Definitely looked much better than the Jets game. But yeah, to talk about Matt Cassel, it's just so clear how much better he is than Alex Tanny, and just how much more of a command he has over an offense, and how he could just run an offense. And I mean, I said this before, that he looked really good in week 17 last year when he was running the offense with Marcus Mariota out. And I'm just really confident in him as our backup. I mean, I wouldn't say that if we didn't have Mariota that he would lead us to 10 wins or anything like that. But he would at least, he wouldn't be the reason for you losing games. And I think that's all you really need in a backup quarterback. And something else you need in a backup quarterback is for him to run over linebackers like Matt Cassel did yesterday. That was amazing.
Oh, that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It wasn't like you trucked him. It was like he ran into him with his shoulder, bounced back, and somehow was still on his feet and then kept running.
Well, he'll make the team as a fullback if he doesn't make it as a quarterback. You know, it's weird because it'll never happen, but with everything that Matt Castle does, it's just a little bit slower. I would love to see him come out and drive the first team offense and then have Mariota come out and drive the first team offense, because you can see the zip on Mariota's balls, and you can just see how crisp everything is and how flat the passes are and how he doesn't have to throw them with an arc. And then Castle comes in and everything's a little bit slower and a little bit less clean.
At times he looks almost like a baseball pitcher, like winding up and then following through with his back leg going back.
Yeah, like Blake Bortles with better decision making. It's all kind of really slow and looping and all that, but he makes good decisions and his ball placement isn't bad. It's not fast and crisp, and you know, credit to the offensive line, because if you can give him time, he can pass for 200 yards game, but he's not gonna be Mariota, which is fine. No backup quarterback is Mariota, even the first round guys taken this year. So, you know, it's good to have Castle there. It's good to see him come back and really step up and say this is his job, and you know that Taney may not make the roster, or they may keep three, I guess, if they really like Taney for whatever reason. But you know, Matt Castle is going to be this team's backup quarterback now.
When is Tyler Ferguson going to get some playing time?
He got playing time yesterday. He took two knees.
The kneels.
That was the funniest thing ever when he strutted out there, and I hear over the PA system, now at quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, number 5, Tyler Ferguson. I was like, what? Like, why does he get kneel down duty?
That's weird. He's going to play in the last one, in the fourth preseason game.
So. I bet he plays like 3 snaps. I mean, I bet they really put Taney through the ringer, especially since, you know, spoiler alert, Corey Davis is probably going to play in the fourth preseason game.
Yeah, yep. I saw that.
And this is interesting. Mariota has played one series in both of the Titans' fourth preseason games that he's been on the team for. And I don't know that I wouldn't. I mean, I honestly think he could play a drive in this one, especially if Corey Davis is playing.
Yeah. Do y'all remember that that preseason game his rookie year? It seemed like they almost wanted him out there against backups just to throw his first touchdown, because he had not thrown a touchdown yet, and it was Harry Douglas.
It was the little – it was like a crosser, and no one touched him.
Yeah. Yeah, and he took it up the sideline, and all those fourth stringers were just looking at Harry Douglas blaze him.
He's a preseason legend.
So you mentioned Corey Davis. Coach Mike Mularkey said earlier that there's a good chance he plays in that fourth preseason game. Someone else that has apparently made progress is Tajay Sharp. He didn't actually comment on his PUP status, but it sounds like Tajay Sharp is not a candidate to start the season on the 6-week PUP list, and that he's probably, if he's on the team, actually on the active roster.
Yeah, I'm a little not confused. Well, yeah, no, I'm confused. I don't know what the Titans are going to do at receiver. I've been looking, and Paul Kuharsky actually just like tweeted at someone, and he thinks that the Titans are going to keep 7 receivers. So it would be Matthews, Davis, Decker, Taylor, Sharp, Harry Douglas, and Weems. So that would be 7, and Weems would be the only one there that kind of plays special teams, except, I mean, maybe Taiwan. Taiwan's been playing some special teams. I'm not sure if he would. Maybe Harry Douglas would play also, but I mean, I personally wouldn't keep 7, but I mean, Harry Douglas is going to make the team. It seems like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my thing with Eric Weems is show me something he can do that Trey McBride can't when it comes to special teams.
I totally agree, but I don't think the coaches agree, because I think they're just going to defer to the veteran, which is Eric Weems, and just give him that spot, I guess, maybe just for comfort or whatever. But Trey McBride, I mean, he's a really good special teams player, and as you saw yesterday, he's really good as a receiver too when given the opportunity. I really want him to make the team, but I mean, right now it's an uphill battle, and given the coaches usually tend to favor veterans, I'm not sure that he makes the team.
You know, I'm looking at the roster now. I don't know why they don't keep 3 tight ends, 2 quarterbacks, and keep 7 wide receivers, and just let Tajay Sharp start out on PUP. You know, let him start out there, keep Trey McBride, keep Eric Weems, keep Harry Douglas all on the roster, then if something happens, because that's fine depth. There's nothing wrong with that. Go into the season like that, knowing that in 6 weeks you're going to get an injection of talent, and maybe one of those guys gets hurt, or maybe they don't. You know, maybe one of the bottom guys, you know, doesn't have the season that you think they'll have, and you can say okay, and you can let them go then. But there's no advantage doing it this way. Not taking advantage of Tajae Sharpe being on the PUP list. Let him get all the way healthy. Game the system a little bit. You know, it's the Patriots' way to take advantages when they're there. Mm-hmm. And Robinson is a Patriots' way guy. It would surprise me, unless Mike Mularkey really wants to see what Tajae Sharpe has, or if he wants to advertise him for a trade, or if they're going to trade mm-hmm. one of their other receivers or something like that. You know, that's the only reason I could see you taking Tajae Sharpe off PUP. But other than that, it doesn't make sense to me. The numbers don't make sense. You're too talented to bring a guy up when you've got this loophole mm-hmm. in the system and you can just let him rest.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because if Sharpe comes back, and even if he's fully healthy, which is a big if, because, I mean, he's coming off a foot injury that's pretty serious, and for a receiver, it's important. I'm not sure how effective he would be, even in a role that at this point looks like it's the fifth receiver behind Matthews, Davis, Decker, and Taylor. I just don't see a point in getting that fifth receiver and not just using someone else who can play special teams in that spot.
So someone that you clearly wanted to talk a little bit more about as we were discussing things earlier is Jonnu Smith, the rookie tight end, third round draft pick. He did a lot of things yesterday. He's done a lot of things in the preseason. You mentioned him playing fullback. He's played inline tight end. He's going to wear a lot of hats for the Titans this year, I think. He's going to have a big role. And so far in the preseason, anyway, he's shown that he will be up to the task.
Yeah, I mean, I've condemned tight end screens before, but if you've got Jonnu Smith out there, go ahead and try it. I mean, he's fast. He's got balance on the sidelines. He's got good hands. You know, there was a play midway through the game where he goes up to get a pass. The safety comes crashing down trying to hit him in the leg so he can't make the catch, and the safety bounces off, and he just lands on his feet and falls forward, and the safety has to be taken off because it's like hitting a brick wall. I mean, he is a solid tight end that can play split out. He can play a fullback. Mike Mularkey said today that they asked him if he wants to come out, and they said they've never heard him say yes. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. Practice reports, you hear him working with the ones, twos, and threes. You know, there's been nothing but glowing reviews from him, and everything we've seen on the field with him with a competent quarterback has been good.
Yeah, he was probably the best player on the field yesterday for some stretches. He led the Titans in catches with five, and he had 47 yards. And if you look at some of like the analytical or metrics on him, he's one of the most athletic tight ends that we've seen in a little bit of time coming out of these draft classes. And it shows on the field. He was making incredible runs after the catch yesterday. He was evading tacklers. He looked really shifty, really quick. I think he's going to make. I mean, he's not going to make a huge impact because because Delaney is still in his prime somehow, even though he's 33 years old. He's still as good as ever. But yeah, Jonnu's going to be a seriously good tight end for us for these next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, and on the 50-plus yard run for David Flewellen, they run towards Jonnu Smith. He tries to get the inside leverage on an outside linebacker. The linebacker swims him, and Jonnu Smith, almost from his knees, recovers and blocks that guy out. Flewellen runs right behind that block for 57 yards. I mean, he's doing more than just catching passes and being a decoy. I mean, he's a really good player, and you can leave him in line if you want to flex Delaney Walker out and give yourself some real personnel problems with other teams. I mean, he's going to be a really good player, whether he shows up as a fullback, inline tight end, or as a flex guy.
Mm-hmm. That versatility is key. Mm-hmm.
One last thing I want to hit on before we get out of here. We talked a little bit about it as we were planning the show. Whether or not Jayon Brown should become one of the Titans' two starting inside linebackers. Unlike you two, I am a fan of Avery Williamson, but only on first and second down. And I think mm-hmm. I would rather have Williamson and Woodyard, two more prototypical sized linebackers, playing on first and second down at this point anyway, and only Jayon Brown playing on third down and in nickel packages. But I think you guys might disagree with that.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start this. Okay, so I think Jayon Brown can do can be the peak of what both of the other linebackers can be. I think he can run stuff just as well as Avery Williamson, even though he hadn't really shown it yet. He showed it some in the Jets game, but he played more outside with a team that, you know, has depth at running back and wide receiver and the Panthers. I mean, yesterday he's the reason why the Titans really sealed the game early with that tipped interception. He makes plays that other people don't make. I don't see a reason why he shouldn't be on the field for 800 snaps this season. If you want Avery Williamson in on rundowns, that's fine. Leave Avery Williamson out there and take Wesley Woodyard out, and Jayon Brown can be your rangy weak side linebacker. If you want Avery Williamson out there, that's fine. If you want Wesley Woodyard out there, take Avery Williamson out and leave Jayon Brown in, and he can do the same thing. If those guys, you know, if you want to go with that lighter package, that Wesley Woodyard and Jayon Brown combination, go ahead and move Cyprian in the box if you want somebody who's a better run stuffer, or Kevin Byard. They can both do it. You know, you can make those adjustments now that you have two really good safeties behind them. But Jayon Brown makes plays for this team, and he stops tight ends from abusing him in the middle of the field, which was the nightmare that kept them out of the playoffs last year. Yeah, that's something that needs to happen for the Texans. It needs to happen for Mercedes Lewis and the Jaguars. It needs to happen. The whole division is stacked with mediocre to good tight ends that can hurt this team and have in the past. And I don't see any reason to leave Jayon off the field.
Yeah, I think Jayon Brown could even play both of their positions, and we could just play with 10 players on the field. He's that good. Now, the play he made yesterday was one of the most athletic plays from a linebacker I think I've ever seen, from a, at least from a Titans perspective. When's the last time we saw a Titans linebacker do something like that? Maybe Zach Brown every now and then, which is interesting because he's wearing the same number as Zach Brown used to wear.
And has the same last name as Zach Brown.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's kind of
better.
Way better. Even though Zach Brown made the Pro Bowl last year.
I don't know that anyone owned a Zach Brown jersey, but if you did, it is now back in good use.
Yeah, that's very clutch. Yeah, but Jayon Brown, I mean, I understand not playing him on the first two downs because Avery Williamson is a very adept run stopper. But, I mean, I think it's going to depend who they're playing against. If we play a run-heavy team, that's fine. Just use Jayon on obvious passing downs. But, I mean, when we play pass-happy teams, he needs to be out there not on every play, but nearly on every play, because a lot of teams just are going to pass on you on first and second down, and they're going to do it with these quick and shifty running backs and tight ends. And if Avery Williamson is out there during a lot of those plays, he's going to get exposed. Like, I hate to say it because he's really good against the run, but he just hasn't shown the ability to cover well on a consistent basis. So I think it's going to depend on the matchup, but I'm fine with Jayon Brown playing on first and second down whenever needed, because he's shown to be able to make some stops in the run game. Even though he's undersized, he can still do that too.
I think one thing LeBeau has preached this offseason, and he said it every time he's been in front of the media, is he wants more game-changing plays, more turnovers, more negative plays. And I'm not making this comparison, but I've seen it out there that some people say they haven't seen a Titans linebacker who've made these kinds of plays since Keith Bullock. And I get it. I mean, he is that rangy kind of guy. Now, he doesn't have like the real weird length that Keith Bullock had. And, you know, he may not be Keith Bullock yet, or he may never be Keith Bullock, because Keith Bullock is probably the Titans' best linebacker in their history as purely the Titans. But
Keith Bullock still looks like he could suit up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he looks, you know, he looks like if we need him in a pinch, we can just pull him out. But, you know, Jayon Brown, if he can give you 50% of what Keith Bullock did, or if he can just tip a ball every now and then, or just cover a tight end, or force a fumble, or, you know, be that kind of playmaker, then you've got to have him on the field.
Next week, we will be joined by analytics expert at Geometrics. We're going to talk to him about the nose tackle position. We're going to talk about Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson, Kalen Reed, someone that he really likes. And I'm going to talk to him about some of my favorite players for selfish reasons, Darius Slay and Patrick Peterson. All that next week, or coming up this week, on the Titan-Sized Podcast. Until then, for Matthias Wadner, Will Lomas, I'm Luke Worsham. We'll see everybody next week.